And we are back with episode 844 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and John, we're going to talk about a show that you're going to be sorry you missed.
Oh. Are we? Okay.
Yes, we are.
Oh, that's news. All right. I'm now curious. But yes, we are going to be rounding out our episodic discussion here. As we said last time, this will be it for... This will probably be the last episode between now and the end of 2017. So when we come back, it will be after the holiday break for many here in the States and even abroad. So yes, before we get into any of that, Gary, if you don't mind giving a disclaimer.
Yes, as we discuss the remainder of our television shows for this third episode, we will be talking about plot points because we don't want to leave anything important out. And there's a lot of things that came up that we want to talk about both amongst ourselves and even get your opinions if you'd like to call into us. So we announced that we aren't going to talk about anything and everything on these shows. It's been over a week or so since they came out, so hopefully you've had time to watch them. So we welcome you to listen to our discussion and tell us if you think we're off, we're crazy, or we're right on target, which I'm probably sure I am. So that's about it.
That's right. And we are going to go ahead and start with, let's see, I'll briefly discuss these episodes of The Exorcist. We had season 2, episode 8, A Heaven of Hell. And then we had episode 9, Ritual and Repetition. And bam, we're getting towards the end of this second season, and it is really gearing up. I think the storytelling is excellent. And might even be better than the first season at this point, because it doesn't rely so much on ties to the original film. It's a story all of its own. And John Cho, who played, of course, Sulu in the Kelvin timeline films, is one of the main characters and is actually the possessed individual this season. And man, does he bring something to that role. Clearly he brings a lot of his acting ability into the play, and it's just great. So I'm enjoying that. I'm almost sad that the second season is almost over, because I don't know that the second was such a surprise, and I don't know how it's doing in the ratings, but I'm not looking, I'm not trying to look ahead to say, oh, well, I can't wait for season 3. I'm assuming this will be it, and I'm just going to enjoy it while it lasts. A show that maybe is starting to wear out its welcome a little bit is next on the list, and that is The Walking Dead. Boy, it is taking it on the chin lately. We have two episodes here that round out the first half of this eighth season, and that is episode 7, Time for After, and then episode 8, How It's Gotta Be. And wow.
I think these are some of the lowest ratings we've ever given the show, as I think about it.
I think you're right. And, let's put it this way. Time for After, that is an episode where essentially Eugene, who has become such a hated character, is pretty much betraying Team Grimes. And that episode somehow wound up being better received than the mid-season finale was. And we both gave, Gary and I both gave the mid-season finale a 5. That might actually be the lowest that I've given an episode of The Walking Dead. And I think that it is absolutely earned. This was a 90-minute episode that maybe had 5 minutes of actual content in it. And at least one of those minutes was an absolute travesty of a plot twist. One that, to me, completely misses the point of the entire story completely. It makes me wonder if these guys even read the source material, let alone understand what role some of these characters play. I understand that the Walking Dead is a story that has a high body count. I also understand that sometimes people want to leave a show, but yeah, you know what? That's not how it played out here. And
I wanted to leave the show during that episode.
Gary, go ahead. You go ahead, because I'll come back in with some of the other reasons why. There are actual external reasons why this episode is even worse than the score represents. But go ahead. I'll let you go.
Wow. I thought it was an atrocious episode. Basically, with an undetermined number of people, the Saviors have not only completely regrouped, but come back with a strength that they didn't even approach the first time they invaded Alexandria or the Hilltop. They came back with about roughly triple the numbers. So I find it hard to believe that they came where this force came from when they've been obliterated in almost every outpost that we knows that we know to exist for them. So it strikes me as very odd. Also, there was no resistance whatsoever put up by anyone at any of the locations. That being said, too, Rick was not at any of the three locations that were being contested at the time. We seemed to see him driving randomly through nowhere to no place. We also see important people like King Ezekiel blow up something completely unrelated to the attacking the Saviors to create a diversion, which made no sense since the Saviors are there in force anyway. We see Carol also continue to do nothing. We see probably the biggest assault was Carl, who was all he was doing was insulting Negan. And that was probably the biggest fight scene that we saw the whole episode. And it just felt like you could flick back through episodes and find all of these pieces because there was not a new line anywhere to be had. As you said, there was virtually no action at all. There was a lot of talking, and it was talking that we've heard before. Oh, Rick's going to pay, and you all have to cow in line to us now, and you shouldn't have done that. I mean, they just organized a major attack against every outpost the Saviors had, and we're having talking going on right now. I think they realized that they need to just kill everyone, and there was not a shot fired as a sort of assassinating or offing everyone at all during these episodes, and it just literally made no sense. Mm-hmm. So there was no real plot line other than the Saviors taking over again, except this time with more people and less action.
Did you like the part where Rick spent two episodes getting the scavengers to ally with him, and within 5 minutes they ran off and you didn't see them again?
Oh, yeah, after he's got to spend another 3-plus days in the box, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just...
Again.
I was just sitting there going... You're kidding, right? You're kidding, right? And then when they start with the flashbacks with Carl, I said, you're really going to do this, aren't you? Because you people aren't subtle. They've played this game before where, oh, they're highlighting a character. Well, damn.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, they're not going to do that, right? Because they do understand that Carl represents the hope within the story.
The future, yes.
Yes. That it completely undermines everything. So get this, Gary. I don't know if you, heard these justifications, but Scott Gimble, who is of course the one who wrote this episode and is the showrunner, basically said that when he was looking at the source material, and again, we've given spoiler warnings, sorry folks, but based on where Rick and Negan go in the future,
yes,
he couldn't wrap his head around how Rick came to the conclusion that he does of what needs to happen. And so his thought was, is that the only way to justify it was to give Rick something that would push him in that direction. And that what happens with Carl and the reason that Carl did what he did that put himself in the position to be bitten is going to be that justification. And the minute I heard that, I said to myself, but you have source material. It's not like
years of source material.
You have the source material of how he came to that conclusion. You know how he came to that conclusion. You don't need to come up with another justification for it. So that doesn't make any sense at all. It just,
No.
And beyond that, I'm sorry, by the way, continue. It's just I had to jump in because that just sticks in my craw. But anyway, go ahead. Finish your thought.
So, we're left with this really odd set of circumstances where a bunch were gunned down, where we should still have a heavily armed squad against these people, and they're not doing anything to fight back at all. Not to mention, we have these other dangling little things like the Saviors that were locked up at Hilltop that we don't see what happens to them once the Saviors actually come. We don't see them be released. I'll assume they are, but we don't actually get to see that. And so I'm really confused by the whole process. So, John, is there some redeeming factor of this that I did not see?
Nope.
I was afraid of that.
I can't see it. I was absolutely beside myself watching this, just thinking to myself, they have fallen so far from that seventh season premiere that was such a representation of the source material and was viscerally something that hit everybody so hard. And they have failed utterly to capitalize on that. In fact, you know, there were many people who said that that was the breaking point for them and they would never go back. And everybody said, basically, don't worry, the quality is going to be so high that you're going to want to come back. You're going to want to see where things go from here. I'm sorry, but they are losing viewers in droves. And at this point, it's not simply a reactionary thing. It is absolutely a response to how just abysmal the writing has become. The what happens in the first half of this season could have been done in half the episodes. And it definitely didn't need a 90-minute mid-season finale. Complete waste of time. And yeah, they really need to rethink what they're doing, or this show is going to end sooner rather than later. I think that they need to start thinking about an endpoint. And they need to really think about it badly.
Well, you know, as you think about the series, you're far ahead at this point, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah, well ahead.
Okay. Well, we know the series as well reaches a point that it drastically slows down. And I said spoilers, but I didn't say it about the comic books. But what the heck, I said. So, you know, we get the flash forward that's due to that should have almost happened already. Yes. And so
it happens at the end of this arc. So, yeah, yes. they are... I always felt like, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but felt that All Out War was the end game for the show, because it is such a natural place to end because of the fact that there is a jump in time after this arc. And it doesn't make sense to jump into that, especially now, because so much of the story after that involves Carl.
Yeah.
What are you going to do, recast Judith and have her take that role? It doesn't have nearly the gravitas at this point. Yeah, they'll pull what they did with Poison Ivy on Gotham. Age her up.
Well, they've aged up the little girl a bunch by now.
Yeah. Anyway, the other thing that's really unfortunate about this, and just to kind of give some of the reasons why, at least also on a personal level, I feel like this was a betrayal to not just to the audience, but also to the cast, namely Chandler Riggs. And they... flat out promised them that he was on the show for at least 3 more years. The kid with his family bought a house in Georgia close to where they produced the show.
Mm-hmm.
And within a couple weeks of that happening, Scott Gimble turns around and basically says, we're writing you out of the show.
Nice.
And there have been comments from him and his family that have since been retracted, but this is the internet. Once it's out there, that, mm-hmm. get into a few other details about this that basically say that they turned around and screwed Chandler over, partially at least because he would be able to renegotiate his contract when he turned 18. And this whole decision was made, or at least communicated, just a few weeks before he turned 18. So there is a lot behind the scenes of this that just adds so much anger to this situation, because it comes across as, like I said, Gimble's story justification doesn't make sense. The episode itself doesn't really work. And then there's all this nonsense going on behind the scenes. They have a lot to make up for, and I have a feeling that they're just going to wind up just running the show into the ground, which is really unfortunate considering.
Mm.
Yeah, so anyway, I think that pretty much says it all with The Walking Dead. I am really unhappy with the way that this eighth season has turned out. It's had some moments where I thought that they were going to get back on track, and then just it's fallen up. The bottom's fallen out. They have a lot of ground to make up for. All right.
Jeez, well, thanks for sharing that background stuff. I'm just more of a show watcher, and I don't follow that level of detail on the series. So.
Well, I don't think that I would have... seen any of that if it wasn't for the fact that Chandler Riggs gave an interview that went out like the night of the episode or within 24 hours, and he was very candid. Because a lot of people were saying basically, oh, he must have decided to leave to go to college. And one of the first things that he says in the interview is, it was not my decision at all. And that's where, when I read that, I was like, oh, okay, what's really going on here? And then you read between the lines, and then it got confirmed by his own father, and it was like, oh boy. This is ugly. This is really ugly. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, wow, just think back. 3-4 years ago, that show was the darling of the cable set. And it was on top of its game. And it has used and abused its audience and its cast. And I have a feeling they're going to pay for it. Anyway, let's go ahead then and move on to a different subject. And in this case, the first thing I'm going to do is just kind of skip over a couple of these to The Gifted. So we have Season 1, Episode 9, Outfox, and Episode 10, Exploited. And, yeah, you know what, with all this news of what's going to happen with the film rights to the X-Men and moving over to Disney and all of that, guys, we already have a really solid X-Men show on the air right now that it seems like no one knows about, even though it's doing fairly well, as far as I understand. These episodes were really good. They're settling in very nicely with their performances, and I'm sorry there's only 3 episodes left of this first season, because it's a really solid tale so far. It would be recommended to anyone who is an X-Men fan, especially since 2018 is actually a pretty big year for the X-Men franchise. You've got New Mutants coming out soon, which I'm really looking forward to. You have Deadpool 2, and then you have the Phoenix. Is it just Dark Phoenix, or is it just the Phoenix? Anyway.
I think the Phoenix, yeah.
Yeah, in the fall, all of which I'm really looking forward to. So there you go. But now let's go ahead and turn our attention to the rest of the DCW, and let's go ahead and start with Supergirl and Rain, the 9th episode of the 3rd season. This was the follow-up on Supergirl to what happened in Crisis on Earth X. And wow, Gary, that drag-out fight at the end of this episode.
Yeah, we really hadn't seen a fight, even when she fought the Fort Ross villains. I don't feel like we ever had her beat. Like, she got walloped that time. Rain just pretty much walked all over, which I'm a little surprised, honestly. One of the things that in comic books that typically get portrayed when another Kryptonian appears is the advantage of years of using your powers, that even though you have a power doesn't mean you can effectively use it. And that's typically where a lot of times where Superman or Supergirl will sort of maybe not win the day, but at least call it to a draw. And that was not the case this time. She just continued to pound away. And we still, I guess they kind of talked about what was going on. And I found it really, really cool to have them bring back Chad Lowe to explain to Supergirl the Kryptonian myths. I thought that was a great little way to both give the nod back to his appearance for the episode that he did, as well as show that, oddly enough, Supergirl doesn't know everything about Krypton. And it always struck me as sort of odd, but because she lived on Krypton till her teenage years, I guess, maybe 12, 13. But then, as I think to myself, my 13-year-old doesn't know everything about the world either. So it made it a little bit more fathomable that she would not be aware of this odd religious cult, from what I can tell, that Rain is coming forth from. Also, we don't quite understand. I guess we saw the ship, so we sort of know she came from Krypton as well. But at least for me, there's still some sort of mystery as how she and why she came to Earth. So there's still some more to be revealed, and I'm looking forward to it. But really, that's not the real reason I'm looking forward to to Supergirl in the future. But we'll have to wait till is it after the break? It's not next season, right? Yeah, after the break.
Yeah,
the episode that I've been looking forward to for.
Yeah, it has a very interesting
3-4 years now. Especially after they blatantly hinted to us for so long now. So, yes, anyway, but we're talking about Rain for right now. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But we do also, we still have Saturn Girl making an appearance, talking to, Kara about how she's the inspiration for this Legion that she's a member of. And it was sort of interesting. And you keep seeing the back and forths to Mon-El, and I don't think he knows what to do at this point either with this whole situation. But, she's obviously moved. I think that he thinks so highly of her, and proclaimed her, her methodology or her vision in when he was spending time in the future. So it should be quite interesting. I'm still trying to figure out how I'd still love to see more of Rain's backstory and how she ended up where she was with not knowing anything about her heritage and how her powers never exhibited themselves at all until the last week or so. So I think that there are a lot of sort of plot holes in this story, but it is nice that they're giving her a villain that challenges her, and physically a lot of her challenges lately I think have been more mental than physical. So while I don't need punching every episode, every once in a while it is nice.
Yeah, but you know what, if we go back to our comments about Justice League last episode, this is proof positive that here's a show doing it on a much smaller budget, and I feel like that fight between the two of them was more effective than Justice League and Steppenwolf. Just my opinion.
Yeah. I'm right there with you. Yep. I wholeheartedly agree with you. That was a
hit pretty hard. So, then what we have is The Flash season 4, episode 9, Don't Run, which was of course their mid-season finale and also their follow-up to the crossover. And this one didn't come in quite as high as recent Flash episodes had been. Henry in particular gave it an absolute average rating. I didn't think it was quite as good either. Gary, you liked it quite a bit more, but I think I already hinted as to some of the things that I wasn't so happy about when I was talking about Arrow last episode. But for you, what worked? Because you gave it a pretty good score.
The ending. The ending worked for me with Barry being framed for murder, just like his father, to go to, oh my God. I was like, oh gosh. I just, the guy, he's set up so well for that. And even though the guy switched bodies, the old body's there, and he's already had a court order to stay, a restraining order against him for the guy. Now the guy's in his apartment dead, and geez, Barry stands there and he's like, should I run? And he doesn't. And I felt emotions welling up, and I don't know what emotions, but they were there nonetheless. He'll be put in jail for a murder, wrongly for a murder, the way his father was, that the villain got over on him, that he's just, he's just reaching happiness, and now that's disturbed too. Oh gosh, there's just there's so much for me. On the other hand, I enjoyed Caitlin's sort of feature role in this. I enjoyed, and I say that as Caitlin, not Killer Frost. I thought that was interesting. I found this idea that people are targeting metahumans to capture them an interesting premise that they could run with going forward as well. This is besides the several other dark matter infused metas that we are still looking for. I feel like they did a. This, to me, is what a pretty good mid-season break is. You create tension and you give yourself a lot of directions to go off into telling story-wise, and I think they did a pretty good job of that.
The only thing that's got me with this, with the Flash in this episode and everything else, is I don't necessarily disagree in theory with what you're saying. Where I run into the problem is that they ramped up Barry and Joe and some of these others as being so confrontational with I can't remember his name, the villain.
We'll say DeVoe. The thinker.
DeVoe,
yes.
All right. They were making decisions, and Barry especially, I mean, because these are people in law enforcement. They're making decisions that are pushing this situation into a realm of harassment that it doesn't need to go to, and it's almost like nothing anyone says is getting through to them, and it feels like that's forced to a degree, and that's what's taking something away from me, is that, yeah, once you get to that point, the emotional stuff that you're talking about really does work, but it is really hard to overcome the fact that to get from point A to point B, they had to really cheat, in my opinion, with how over the top they were getting. They knew that they were going over the line, and it's like, there's no real need for it yet. It just, and the tonal shift, because things were working really well when they were kind of more lighthearted for a while there, and now they kind of turned again towards the over the top drama, and I feel like that also fed into it. But yeah, it just, for me, it's just like Barry and Joe both were really over the top in this episode in terms of what they were willing to do. Mm. That's just my opinion, though, and hopefully when they get back from the break, it'll play out better with the emotional side that you were talking about, because I can't ignore the fact that, yes, having him charged for a murder that he was framed for, and the parallels with his father, yeah, I got you on that one. I can hear you disagree, but that's okay.
Yeah. Well, no, to each their own, that's fine. Yeah. It's hard to have a good discussion if you're both yesing each other, so that's fine.
But hey, I will say, on the balance, the fourth season of The Flash has been a marked improvement over the previous one.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
I don't think there's any disagreeing with that. Now, Gary, there's this other show on here that I assume this is the one that you were talking about, because I've seen every other show on the list, so this is the only one that's possible.
Probably.
Yeah, what would you think? So we had one episode of Legends of Tomorrow, which is season 3, episode 9, Bebo, the God of War. Was Bebo bringing it? That's what I need to know.
Oh my gosh, Bebo brought it so hard.
It was beyond belief. Oh my gosh. You know, this is an example of, we talk about a show at certain points embracing their absurdity and not only running with it, but scoring the touchdown and finishing the game. And this really was. They have, you were wondering what they were going to do. Martin Stein had died. So, but that's okay. We're time travelers. So they've brought in a younger Martin Stein.
Okay. Interesting.
And at some point, somehow, he fell through, I will call it a time vortex.
All right.
A hole in time, and ends up back at, in the Americas around, I guess, I'll say 300 AD, about the time of Leif Erikson.
Okay.
And as he comes over, he had recently purchased a Hanukkah gift for his daughter, a Bebo talking doll. And when they saw this doll, they felt that Professor Stein was nearly a god because he could make this creature speak on command. Later on, when the queen, who, and let me tell you, almost everyone looks like they came right out of Vikings.
Nice.
I mean, if you could squint slightly and imagine Ragnar and his wife and the other wife, it's pretty much all there. They took those characters, geez, nearly dead on. temperaments and everything. Anyway, when the one of the wives finds out that she can make Bebo talk, she takes over from Stein, locks him up, and proceeds to, through us somehow not being immune to time changes now, finds out that that as a result of this, the Vikings stayed in the New World and took over all of the Americas. Leading to not quite an Earth X per se, but definitely a Nordic homeland over across the Americas. And so the legends realize that they have to go back and, you know, stop this. And they find out that the key to it is recapturing Bebo. This talking stuffed animal that somewhat reminds you of Teddy Ruxpin, who really only says like 8 phrases.
That's perfect. Okay.
It's bright blue. They carry him on like this mini throne around the village.
This sounds hilarious. Okay. I will give them credit for this. Okay.
Bebo, what should we do? Bebo's hungry. That's it. Sacrifice them.
I may need to find this episode.
As I said, I understand that I'm taking one for the team. And this time around, I don't feel like I really took one that hard because it was hilarious. Oh, what was it? In Bebo's name. He actually became like a swear.
That's great.
Yeah. So it was quite humorous. even if you're not a usual fan of it, it's pretty self-contained, and it was pretty good. Damien Dark also appeared in it, which was a bit odd, but my personal favorite was White Canary decided that I'm fed up with Damien Dark. I'm going to take him out. And so she goes up to take him out. He immediately snaps her neck, kills her. Then you realize it's just them blue skying how to take him out. And so they go through about 5 or 6 different scenarios on how to take out Damien Dark before they pick the one they go with. But really, it all comes down to just getting rid of Bebo. It's quite humorous. So.
Wow.
Yeah. And I gave it an 8.5 because it was, for its absurdity, it was really that funny.
I am all about absurdity, so I may need to look this one up because it may have finally kind of refound its footing a little bit here, if nothing else for an episode. But
yes, for an episode. Say, I don't put that much faith in it.
There you go.
Long-term,
I thought you were going to say that this one got a higher grade or a higher score because of what happened at the end. Because I heard there was a cameo. Am I wrong, or am I thinking of a different episode?
No, you could be. I was so captured by Bebo.
Was this the episode where Constantine came back at the end?
Yes, it was. It wasn't much of a piece of anything at all. Okay. Wait. I'm trying to think. I don't even think there was an episode. I think it was the. No, it wasn't the episode. There was about 3 second, maybe a 10 second thing. But it didn't. It was literally at the right before the credits rolled. He showed up.
Gotcha.
And so we'll see the next episode. And yes, it's the same guy that has been visiting various DCEU properties, playing Constantine. What's the actor's name? Do you recall offhand? Or?
Matt Ryan?
Matt, yes. Yeah, it's him. And his, I wonder, did he just keep the clothes? Because they looked like the identical things that he's been, that we've been used to seeing him wear. So, he's back, and I'm sure he can be enjoyable. He'll be enjoyable. I won't get into any debates on whether or not he works best as a guest star or can really carry his own show for a season or two. But I was happy to see him. I look forward to the episode coming up. So we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, so he's making yet another appearance. Will the CW actually, bring him back? Can they bring him back? I don't know.
I don't see why they can't if they were able to have him on Arrow for an episode.
That's true. If they release the rights, I suppose that's possible.
Yeah. Maybe so. Yeah, hopefully.
You never know. But we can hope. And but we'll see. I think they so far he has been used effectively in the Arrowverse. So I'm hoping they continue to do so. I think he's a fun character. Maybe part of the issue is, as someone who's supposed to be a mysterious magic user, having someone having him fleshed out day to day, so to speak, maybe that takes away too much of the mystery, perhaps. I'm not sure, but I'm glad to see him, and I'm looking forward to seeing him. But no, there was not much of anything at the from the
Something
episode.
To look forward to next time, then, apparently.
Yes. Definite teaser, yes.
All right, so let's see. That's it, then. So any last thoughts for the season so far, I guess? For overall, just this fall.
Go ahead. Not you, sir.
I was going to say, I think that's just very quickly that I think that so far there's been a lot of good surprises.
Yeah, I think a lot of shows, as you talked about the Flash, I felt Arrow had fallen into a bit of a rut as well. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., we at the time didn't know if they were even coming back at this, at a certain point, has come back and come back really strong, in my opinion. So I think a lot of the shows that we were questionable about have come back pretty darn strong. And then other shows that we were pretty strong on, such as The Walking Dead, we're now sort of scratching our heads. So definitely a lot of changes happened.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. And in a lot of these cases, I still think that the banner headline for a lot of these shows is the fact that we are in a world where 10 to 13 episodes is for a season is actually more likely anymore than a full season. And I can't say that I'm nearly as upset at that as I thought I would have been 5 years ago.
Well, don't get me wrong. I never looked forward to filler episodes, cut shows, or anything like that. But at the same time, there are times when some of these shows you really wish they would have another three to five, six, episodes, or even, fill out. Now, while, I don't necessarily follow some of the shows that you follow, as I hear you talk about, things like Mr. Robot, where, geez, you wish you can't get enough of it. Where I see shows that I do follow, like Orville, Already Done, when I felt they were just, just about perfect hitting it. It's sad to see, they're not, while they're not gone, but at least in the case of Orville, the season's over, so now we have to wait a substantial time for it to, come back again. And times like that, yeah, I wish there was. They did come back. They did have an extra. They had what we would use to consider a full season run.
At the same time, I wonder if the reason that we have this such a high, or let me put my thought a little bit differently, that there's a benefit to the fact that they leave us a little hungry, rather than feeling like, okay, that was nice, but I'm not really begging for the next season. Where some of these shows, like I feel like the DCW, I think that if Edmund were here, he'd probably agree with me quite a bit. Having full seasons of all these shows actually wears you down after a while. It wouldn't be bad for them to actually start rotating those on shorter seasons, because then maybe the writing would be even tighter, and they wouldn't run out of steam on some of the, like a show like Legends of Tomorrow might benefit from only having a 10 to 13 episode season and being able to be a little tighter and more focused.
It's a double-edged sword, though, John, because then sometimes, I think specifically about some character pieces that you might not get because they don't serve the arc or something like that. Like from Deep Space Nine, I think about The Visitor, very much a standalone episode, really didn't contribute to the Dominion War in the least, but it was probably one of the strongest episodes of the season. And if you had I'll use the term tight season, you might not have gotten an episode like that.
And that's also true because we do have this, the prevalence these days of serialized storytelling versus episodic, where maybe because they're shorter seasons working hand in hand with the serialization that we're seeing more and more often, that you know, a lot of these writers are thinking, if we have 10 episodes, we can tell a 10 episode story, where shows now like The X-Files coming back in a few weeks. I can't believe that that's actually coming back again in a few weeks, but they're having 10 episodes, I believe.
I want to believe it's coming back, but I can't imagine that somebody would actually do it.
And yet they did. Yeah. I think it's 10 episodes, and they still are very adamantly sticking with the mixed format where they have quote-unquote mythology episodes, and then they have, you know, standalone Monster of the Week episodes. And that's now the that's the exception to the rule rather than the, you know, something novel like it was back in the day. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not that still that feels incredibly discordant when we have other shows that are like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where yes, they have longer seasons, but they do these mini arcs, and that seems to really work well. But as you say, there is the drawback that I agree, I don't think that we would have some of the gems that were fostered by the golden age of syndication, where you had 27 episodes in a season and you had to fill some of those gaps, and character pieces rose out of the that tension of, hey, how can we do an episode here and give, hey, we can give half the cast a break if we focus it on this character. Yeah. And you know, the only show that's really done that recently has been The Walking Dead a few seasons back, and a lot of people didn't like it because it took the attention away from the main story. So I think it is a fair point. Are we missing something by doing this? I think that there is a trade-off. At the same time, if you're going to have to reduce a season down to 10, 13 episodes, putting all of your best effort into telling the, you know, most consistent and strongest story you can is probably the best way to go. It keeps everybody engaged. It keeps the audience engaged. And like I said, they're hungry for more at the end of the season. Good. Versus feeling like, God, can this season end already? Which, I mean, there are times when you feel that way even now. We'll see. We'll see what the spring brings. But I have noticed that a lot of the shows that were on our list for the fall are already done for the year. They're not coming back. So that's a real change of pace. Even if we saw it coming, it's still a change of pace. Sure. All right. Well, one last thing that I want to say before we wrap everything up is I want to thank the listeners for their patience this year. I know that the scheduling has been a little crazy, but most of the people have been very dedicated and in coming back episode by episode, sometimes even going back and filling in the blanks as we've suggested that they do, as we tend to have some people that listen much later after they come out. And we deeply appreciate your listening and your support. And really look forward to bringing you more next year. Gary, any further thoughts on that?
Oh, no, I agree. We appreciate everybody that listens to us. I my only wish would be that we do get a little bit more feedback. That really helps us understand not only what you guys are looking for, but sort of steers us in what we need to start looking at maybe a little bit more or a little bit less in some cases. So please feel free to give us any feedback that you'd like. We have thick skins. You can tell us you don't like something and we'll be all right. So or please praise us too. We'll take that any day of the week.
Yeah, and I do know that there are some people who in recent weeks were asking about what happened to the forums over at VOG. They kind of weren't getting a lot of traffic, so we really kind of stopped using those, even to give out the schedules. The other reason is, of course, is if you've been listening, you know that the schedules are very fluid, not just when we run the episodes, but what we talk about. I usually take very brief notes throughout in order to put in, in order to remind myself what we talk about from episode to episode, because we prefer a little bit looser formatting these days. So it's a little bit hard to then put up a proposed schedule for, oh, here are the top and bottom shows for this particular week, because we don't really do it that way anymore. Trying to find a middle ground has been a little bit tough with everything else going on. But with the break that we're taking now and coming back strong, hopefully in January, I will mention that VOG Network does have a Discord channel. For those who use Discord, it's actually a pretty good service. I know that for gamers, it's definitely very handy. But one thing that we are thinking about doing, or I've been thinking about doing anyway, is maybe putting a channel, a sub-channel together there, if that's the right wording for it. But within the VOG Network family, having a channel for discussion, either, you know, kind of across the board, not just for here, our show, our podcast, but then also the reviews that are written and put up on there. We can talk a little bit more directly about television and movies and kind of rebuild the communication and the feedback there, because we definitely want feedback. For instance, I mean, we just talked about The Last Jedi. We were praising it And we were also wondering how people could, you know, what some of the criticisms could be on some points. By all means, we want to hear from you. We want to be an engaged fandom. We don't want to just be kind of talking in an echo chamber. So just some of the things that are out there, even though we don't have the forums anymore. And it is sometimes a little bit difficult on the Facebook page to keep up with everything because Facebook just, they keep messing with things. And I swear I don't get notifications until well after the fact, and then they get lost somewhere. So maybe the Discord channel might be the way that we go. But I echo what Gary is saying. We would love to hear back from people, and we definitely want to re-engage. We were having a good amount of feedback at one point, and then I think just things kind of got away from us as on a lot of different levels to lead to the point where we're not hearing back from people quite as much. So so this is it for this year. I want to thank everybody yet again, and I want everyone to hopefully have the happiest holidays possible.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.